Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Has Gaza's two-year genocidal nightmare come to an end? Given what we know about the announced ceasefire, it's impossible to say. A ceasefire is not the same as a peace plan. Once there's been an exchange of captives, will all bets be off? Crosstalking Trump's peace plan, I'm joined by my guest, Marwa Osman in Lebanon. She's an assistant professor at the Lebanese International University and a political commentator. In the UK, we have Ismail Patel. He is chairman of the Friends of Al-Aqsa, as well as author of several books, including A Brief History of Palestine. And in Italy, we cross to Romana Ribeiro. She is an author and managing editor of the Palestine Chronicle. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. I'd like to get kind of a quick response to the recent news here. I want to point out to you, probably can't see it, but I'm calling this program Ceasefire Maybe. Okay, so maybe with my introduction and the title of this program, I guess you can sense a little ambivalence from me. Marwa, first.
Well, it is actually a bit weird to say ceasefire, knowing that Zionist Israel has never kept its end of the bargain. I mean, we saw what happened in Lebanon. We saw what happened in Syria. So I'd be also very careful in calling it a ceasefire at the moment, given that even when they called out it was a ceasefire, bombs were still falling on certain areas in Gaza. And we also saw the Israeli occupation forces giving out announcements and threats saying that the northern part of Gaza is still considered a war zone, quote unquote, which means that people cannot actually go back home if there is still a home up and running in North Gaza. So it is very vague. It is still something that we are seeing at the international arena, media talking about it, but on the ground, the besiegement is still there. People are still under the rubble. People don't know if they should leave the tents or just stick to where they are right now, because if you move, you might not get a spot back in the tent that you have at the moment. And at the same time, you have the risk of actually getting on the nerves of a certain drone or a quadcopter that could end your life and the lives of your kids as we speak. So it is very risky. I don't believe that Zionist Israel will keep its end of the bargain as usual, but I think this is just some sort of a charade, an international charade led by Donald Trump. Maybe, just maybe, he gets the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, it's kind of odd. Ismail, let me go to you. The timing of all of this right before the announcement. I mean, I've never heard anyone in my life demanding to be given that award. I mean, talk about change of norms. But that is the way he is. What are your thoughts here, Ismail? Because the only thing, if we looked at the 20 points, it's all vagueness except for it's very specific about the captive exchange. And it seems to me that they're calling that the first stage. I just have to wonder if there's going to be a stage after it. Go ahead.
Well, let's put the Nobel Prize first. Give it to him, because I think the Nobel Prize has lost its all integrity and honor.
Well, I mean, since you're commenting on it in another ironic way, he deserves it because it's united the entire world against Israel and the United States. I guess that's something. I've interrupted. Keep going, my friend.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I mean, let's be honest about the ceasefire plan that has been put forward. We've had similar one in January, which was phase two phase plan. Israel, within the first 2 weeks of that plan, reneged on it and carried out a bombing that killed 400 people in one night to end that ceasefire agreement. So we have something very similar. My heart is saying, you know, it wants to be joyous.
Yes.
My analytical brain is definitely saying, no, please be cautious. We've been here before and we've been disappointed many a times. Let me just give you a very big example. In 1982, when Israel invaded Lebanon and asked the PLO to move out from Lebanon, and the international community gave security to the Palestinian people, what happened is within a week after that, we had the Sabra and Shatila massacre. And I want people never to forget that. Despite the fact that the international community, including America, guaranteed the safety of the Palestinians, once Yasser Arafat left Lebanon, there was a massive massacre. I fear that we could have something similar once the Israeli receive their hostages and the Palestinian hostages staying in Israel, some of them are returned. we might see a return of those kind of things. So therefore, let's watch this space. We have to keep on the pressure, and we hope for the better, but my mind tells me otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, our minds and our emotions are so intertwined right now. It's very difficult. Ramana, I find it very interesting. Why now? I mean, why not a year ago? Why not 3 months ago? And I'd like to point out to our viewers, it has been estimated since the start of this genocidal campaign in Gaza, one Palestinian child has died each day. Go ahead, Ramana.
Every hour.
Yes, it's the question here is always the same. Can we trust Israel? Can we trust Trump? Can we trust this timing? Unfortunately not. As was said before, Israel not only has violated every previous ceasefire during these 2 years genocide, but even historically, it has a history of deception. And if we look at the general framework, at the so-called Trump's so-called peace plan, clearly, it's not designed for justice. It is designed on one side for political theater and also to destroy, to completely erase a project for Palestinian resistance and liberation, but for Palestinian existence, I would say. Yet we have to be very practical here. The Palestinian resistance had to understand the reality on the ground. And the reality on the ground is that with an international system that completely and utterly failed to restrain Israel in any way, they were forced to make a tactical decision. So they tried to separate the two moments, to separate the end of the war and the genocide. People in Gaza are exhausted, and this is something that we need to take into account, and the future of liberation, trying to say, let's discuss and negotiate on this phase, but do not discuss about the future, because we do not have the national consensus, which is true, by the way, to do so. Clearly, it is a gamble. Every ceasefire with Israel is a gamble. But I say that again, the resistance had no other choice, I think, because of the failure of the international community to act against Israel, and because the international community and this international system completely abandoned Gaza and the people of Gaza. By the way, just, you know, a glimpse of hope. This ceasefire, in any case, this announcement is also a victory for the people of Gaza, for their resilience. And we have to say that despite 2 years of genocide, mass displacement, erasure, Israel proved that it didn't defeat Gaza and it didn't achieve any true and meaningful military and strategic goal.
Yes, but on the also in the other side of the coin of that, Marwa, Israel's never going to be held account. There's no accountability in this 20-point plan. All of what has been said by government officials, arms contractors, Netanyahu himself, the culpability of the United States, Europe. No one is being held accountable in this 20-point program. As a matter of fact, there's not much politics in it, okay? There's a lot of real estate, it seems like, in it. Marwa.
Yeah, sure. I do agree with you, because when you look at it, it's the West that has been actually complicit in the genocide against the people of Palestine. But their reputation has collapsed, and it is irreversible, my friend. I mean, the genocide that everyone took part in Gaza, it exposed the real true face of this so-called liberal world order, if you will. But when Western states rushed to defend Israel when it did not need to be defended, it was committing genocide, it flattened refugee camps, it bombed UN schools and even UN employees, workers who are non-Palestinians. They killed their own credibility. And I say this, it's not only Israel that killed its own credibility, the entire West that usually says that it upholds human rights, but it just now rings hollow. Anything that is just close to a word that resembles democracy inside of Israel sounds like a cruel joke at the moment. Obviously, the people in Gaza are not laughing. When it is a joke when it's spoken by those governments that helped Israel actually bankroll mass murder and now traded into some real estate plan. But for decades, the Israelis, they hid behind this kind of language of freedom, of law, of self-defense, but Gaza and the genocide, it stripped that mask off. Even if there's no accountability, the people know, Peter. It's no longer something that can be hidden. And we've seen that, especially in the Global South, and now some of the people who are waking up in the West as well. We saw it in Latin America and Asia. People see this clearly. They see the Western civilization as it calls itself has become something synonymous with maybe selective morality. And Israel not only destroyed Gaza, it has dragged all of its allies down with it.
Yes, because this was a televised in real time genocide. We all know who did what. It's the most documented event in history.
In history.
Go ahead, Ismail.
Absolutely. I mean, concur with Marwa that, you know, we have a moral bankruptcy in the West, not only a moral bankruptcy, but duplicity and hypocrisy of these international institutes. The West has shown that some laws and some values are more important than others. And more than that, some lives are more important than others. And if you do not happen to have the same skin color or the same ideology as those in the West, then, you know, your life is worthless, really. And that is what Gaza has exposed. And therefore, I think it is imperative for us to understand what the people of Gaza have achieved for us. It has exposed the hypocrisy for the whole world to understand that nobody, as a minority, nobody who's marginalized is safe against the institutes that exist around the world. And I think that is something we need to acknowledge. But more than that, I think we should also be aware, according to President Trump himself, that he told Netanyahu that Israel cannot fight the entire world. I think that says a lot, that even Trump now is aware that the entire world is not only against Israel, but its backers, America. And the entire world has that power and that has capacity and capability to put enough pressure to bring about that change. And I think that is something we should continue pressing and highlighting.
Yeah, I think even Donald Trump has realized the stench of genocide. You can't get rid of it. It's stuck on you. It will stay with you forever. In terms of the Global South, no matter what happens, that is his legacy in the Global South, is genocide, like with Biden, like with the rest of them. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's so-called peace plan. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's so-called peace plan. Ramon, a good friend of the program, Alistair Crook, explained. He was part of the Northern Ireland peace process at the end of the ending the troubles there. And he told me the detail in which you had to go through to verify both sides are adhering to the agreement. It took months and months and months to work on the mechanics of it. Even after it had been agreed, then the mechanics had to be discussed. We have none of that here. Hamas has to disarm. Well, what does that mean? Israel will withdraw. What does that mean? There's no specificity here. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a lack of specificity and of dignity, if you want. But honestly, we couldn't expect more from the actors that are currently leading this process. As I said, Israel, a genocidal state, the U.S., which basically you can't see the difference between Israel and the U.S. at this stage, led by Donald Trump, which is even particular sinister in a sense. Plus, even the countries that are should guarantee and should look over this process, like Arab countries like Qatar, Egypt, or even Turkey, they didn't really offer any guarantees. So I say, unfortunately, this is the reality on the ground, and we can just hope that this genocide is gonna be over now because Israel cannot sustain a permanent state of war. Also because don't forget that Israel now has never been so isolated as it is now. So I really believe that we need to push because this genocide has to end right now because the people in Gaza are exhausted. But I also think that the global solidarity and this process that has started during the genocide should continue to push, because what we are witnessing is clearly a shift from a symbolic solidarity to a material resistance. Like, I don't think the pro-Palestine movement is confined to protests asking just for peace, which, let's be honest, peace without justice is just like a meaningful word. So, for example, I speak about Italy because I know this reality very well. I have seen dock workers refusing to load ships and literally dragging millions of people to the streets and on a general strike that for 2 days blocked and paralyzed the country completely. So I think this kind of solidarity is the only guarantee that at this point the Palestinian people can have. Because if we look at the political actors of this stage, it's a terrifying moment, to be honest, and we cannot trust anybody here.
You know, Marwa, one of the, again, to add to the ambivalence that we all share here is that Donald Trump wants to address the Knesset. I mean, I thought he was trying to be a mediator, and he obviously wants to show that he has a preference for one side here. That, I mean, that just kind of, you know, the mask just drops off again. I mean, because this is rewarding them to stop their genocidal aggression. You shouldn't award anyone for in that way, okay? I just find it revolting, to be honest with you. Marwa.
Donald Trump never attempted to be a mediator, Peter. He actually, every time he used to say, if throughout the 2 years that has passed, and especially during his term, every time there was something close to a ceasefire or an agreement, he would say, if Hamas doesn't abide by the demands, then we will make all hell break loose against Hamas. This is not a mediator. This is taking sides from the beginning. But there's something very, very important that everyone should know, especially people who believe that now is a time that Israel will stop a genocide. I'm sorry to say, but out of experience, I know for a fact that Israel cannot exist in peace. It cannot. The fundamental part of the Zionist project is war, Peter. They're not going to stop. They already made the decision. I mean, if they were going to stop, they would at least abide by the ceasefire in Lebanon and not go through with any war with Iran, because now they're talking about a second phase of the war with Iran. Because war is not a consequence of Zionism and colonialism. It is the engine of Zionism and this entity that was brought about us by the Brits and then was taken over by the Americans. But Zionism, it was born into violence, through violence, expanded through violence. Now it is surviving. It is only surviving through violence. So the project itself demands constant conflict to expand territory, to justify militarization, to sustain some sort of a sieged mentality that unites a deeply, deeply fractured settler community within the Zionist entity. So peace would mean maybe confronting what Zionism truly is. It is a colonial enterprise, and it's being set perfectly by Trump. And colonialism cannot coexist with justice. You say peace cannot exist without it. It will never coexist with justice. So here, Israel actually manufactures perpetual war, whether in Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, you just name it, possibly Egypt too soon. So even through its influence and its operations, when it claims that it is defending itself, it's actually defending its right to oppress others. The day that Zionist Israel stops waging war is, trust me, the day that Zionism ceases to exist. So yes, Israel cannot live in peace, because peace would definitely expose it as an illegitimate entity. Its existence depends on the very violence it pretends to fear. And just mark my words, after Hamas gives those captives, the genocide will continue.
Well, I tend to agree with you, and that seems logical, considering not just during this genocide that Israel does not keep its word, it always breaks its word. Actually, the quote-unquote, the first Trump ceasefire, it broke. The American president's ceasefire. One of the things I find really troubling is what is this plan working toward, to go back to October 6th? 2023? Well, that's not a condition that anyone wants to go back to. Is the blockade going to be reinforced? I mean, none of these things are being addressed. They don't want to talk about the politics because they don't want to talk about Palestinians, because there's very little about Palestinians in this plan. Ismail.
Absolutely. What we have is a dictatorial regime, a global superpower through Donald Trump, who's temperamental, to say the least, imposing his will through Israel, a leader who's a war criminal and wanted by the ICC. And they're trying to impose their way on Gaza. First and foremost, now the retreat, what we will have is not even a return to the 6th of October line. I think they will continue managing or occupying a wider part of Gaza than Gaza existed before 7th of October. So we have the Palestinian, the Rafah crossing is most likely to go. Israel will have total control of that. So the people in Gaza will become under total siege of the Israelis. Even that little passage they have towards Egypt will be closed off. So we have many issues that are unknown to us. And the details are, as you mentioned earlier, are very sparse and far in between. And this is deliberate. I think this is deliberate to convey to the world society and community to say, look, we're trying to bring about peace. And when the Palestinians try and highlight this, I think Israel will use that as an opportunity to continue with its genocide and renege on its ceasefire deal, not even a peace deal, as you mentioned earlier, and we might go back to the status quo. But in a way, I think what I would like to highlight is we need in the civil society and in the international community, particularly in the West, in Britain and in Europe and in Americas, that we need to really continue with our lobbying, campaigning and protesting. And we should not give up, because this is the time not to avert our attention from the activism. Because if we do that, then I think that'll give a green light to the Americans and the Israelis to even speed up their prosecution of the Palestinian people. As I think Marwan mentioned earlier, that we have a pivotal role to play and bring about that change. So I hope we continue, and particularly in London, there's a massive demonstration call for the Saturday 11th, and we hope that more and more people turn out and demand justice. And one other thing that, of course, we haven't mentioned here is what about the crimes that has been committed by Israeli politicians over the past 2 years of war crimes and crimes against humanity and crimes of genocide? What will happen to them? We need to make sure that justice is been meted out, and they are brought to the ICC, they are brought to the International Criminal Court, and make sure that they're properly interrogated, and when found guilty, then that they should pay the price for that.
Yeah, let's go back to Ramana. One of the things I find outrageous, I mean, I thought it was a sick joke that Tony Blair will look over all of this here. A war criminal, he's going to be the viceroy or something. He's going to be the little emperor being paid huge amounts of money. I mean, the people that wrote this, I guess like Jared Kushner or people like that, they are just politically tone deaf.
Absolutely. And I think the appointment of Tony Blair, which is part of that circle of that clique, that who also has interests in the Middle East, and we all know that, is anyway is a sign of desperation. Like when I say that, you know, there is a gleam of hope, I'm not saying that Israel can live without the war or that Zionism. Of course, we all know that. This is a Zionist enterprise. It is a settler colonial enterprise that, you know, war is an entrenched concept for them since the very start. But what I mean is that Israel has been weakened too. After these 2 years of genocide, the U.S. is also a collapsing empire. The West is not invincible. And I know that now maybe it can be difficult to understand this, but the resistance of the Palestinian people, there is one thing they taught us, that Israel is not invincible, that Israel can be defeated, Israel can be made weaker and weaker. And this is why I see that at the end of this tunnel, there can be a light. And the only light really comes from the Palestinian people and their resistance and resilience on the ground. This is my only hope, because this is a West that suggests Tony Blair as the resolutor of conflict. So, you know, it is a very desperate Western empire.
Well, and Marwa, if there's any kind of silver lining in all of that has happened here, is the change of consciousness in the West. I was commenting to a friend of mine a couple days ago, calling Israel a Zionist regime. No one knew in the public knew 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, what it meant. Now it's in common currency. This is an amazing change, and they're terrified. They're TikTok. They have to control They have to control Netflix. They have to control CNN. It's really amazing what's happening. Last 30 seconds to you.
I understand, but we have to put that into action, Peter.
I agree.
Because if it's just there, people will tend to forget, because they will control every part of the media that tries to unbrainwash the public. We need to understand that every deal, that every negotiation is just another chance for Zionist Israel to reload. Look, the ethnic cleansing policy by Zionist Israel is not an accident. It is a policy. The demolition of homes, the assassinations, the starvation, the displacements, these are a Zionist blueprint, and it doesn't stop in Gaza, as I said before. But the same agenda is unfolding, and it unfolded during the past 2 years in the West Bank, in Al-Quds, Jerusalem.
And on that note, depressing note, unfortunately, we have to end the program. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Italy, the UK, and of course in Lebanon. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.